Hear me okay?
Yep, we can hear you.
Yep. Not all.
Okay, so welcome to the final SPNR of this council mandate. So I'd like to welcome everybody to the meeting this evening, and hopefully everyone can hear me clearly. Everyone should ensure their mobile telephones are switched off or switched to silent, and the use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussion of in-committee items. Members of the public and press must refrain from using the instant messaging facility during the meeting, and anyone found to be doing so will be given a warning. Failing to adhere to the guidelines for a second time will result in being removed from the meeting. I would remind members of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they may have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the chamber or hang up from the call for the duration of the discussion on that item, and it should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion on that item has ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except where Council is considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system on the computer, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded they're personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. And please ensure if you want to speak on an item, either in the chamber or via Teams, to use the chat facility to indicate your wish to speak, and I'll bring members in as listed. So just to remind you, a Q for a question, C for comment, P to propose, and S to second. And do refrain from making any other comments using the instant messaging facility. If you need to leave the meeting early, please indicate via chat so that we're aware this is an active decision and doesn't indicate connectivity problems. Okay, so just before we start the meeting, on behalf of the Sinn Féin group, and I would like to offer condolences to the family and friends of former Mourns councillor Brian Quinn. May he rest in peace. If we could just move on then to the declaration of interest. Oh, sorry, apologies, are from Josephine Kelly, Marie Ward, Conor Mallon, any other?
Chair, just sorry, under chairperson's remarks, yes. I don't know if it's common knowledge of why Josephine's not here tonight, Andrew.
Sorry, Chair, the reason Josephine's not here tonight is that her mother died last weekend, and obviously our sympathies are with her this time.
Yes, obviously on behalf of the committee, we do extend our condolences to Josephine and her family. Okay, do we have any other apologies? No, okay. And any declarations of interest? No. Okay, so if we go through the action sheet arising from SPR committee held on the 16th of February. We'll go through it for accuracy. So page 1, 2, 3, 4 and 5. And if we could have a proposer and seconder. Proposed by Councillor Gallagher and seconded by Councillor O'Meara. Okay, so item 4, no matters arising, I take it? No, okay. Item 4 is the presentation from Land and Property Services, and I would welcome Gary Humphrey this evening, who's going to take us through the presentation. Thank you, Gary.
Hi there, and hopefully you can hear me okay.
Yes, I can hear you okay.
Okay, I'm just going to share some slides here as well, so just bear with me a second. Okay, so hopefully those slides should be coming up on your screen anytime now. So my name is Gary Humphrey. I'm one of the senior valuers here in Land and Property Services, and also a manager for Reval 23. And that's the revaluation of all non-domestic businesses in Northern Ireland.
Gary, yeah. Sorry to interrupt you. You're glitching slightly, okay. Stepping in and out.
I think it's trying to I must be trying to share the screen here. Just unfortunately, once I share the screen, I can't see anybody. Is that okay now?
Do you want our team here to share it? Would that help?
Yeah, maybe that might help. Yeah.
We'll try that just to see. Maybe it's maybe taking too much. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you, Gary.
No, you're okay. No problem.
Yeah, if you just stop sharing, the girls here will do it. Thank you. Okay, Gary, so it's being shared from the stand then, so that'll help.
Okay, yeah, no problem. So I was just saying that basically I'm the project manager for the REVAL project, which is the revaluation of all non-domestic commercial properties in Northern Ireland for rates purposes. These slides are just designed, I'll try and keep it brief, but they're designed to give you a bit of a background to the rating system, an overview of the revaluation task itself and some of the outcomes for your district. Can I have the next slide, please? So the fundamental principle for any property tax system and rates as a property tax system is all about fairness and equality. Our current system dates back to the Spanish Armada, believe it or not. At that time, they basically tried to get a pot together to fund the sailors coming back from the Armada who couldn't find work. It was only supposed to last a year, but it turned out to be incredibly popular, and governments around the world, even to this day, are still putting in similar kinds of property tax systems. There's only about less than 10 countries in the world that don't have a version of the rate system. And the reason why governments like it is because it's quite reliable, it's predictive, it's not that difficult to count how many properties you have within your jurisdiction. And then you divide that ratably by the amount of money that you need to generate to provide the services that you have in your districts. It's also quite hard to evade. It's difficult to hide a property. And from an LPS perspective, we try and be as transparent as possible. So the valuation list is a public open document. Anybody can go and have a look at it. You have a look at your own property, and you can also have a look at comparable or similar properties in that locality. We do recognise that it's, it is unpopular. It can be quite emotive at times, and it represents a fixed cost and quite a significant fixed cost for some people to do business. And the rates liability tends to increase as districts need to generate more money to pay for the services they provide, and as their costs increase, then the rates liability tends to increase in line with that. There's also a need for experts, and what happens there is that sometimes the more challenging cases become and go through the courts, it can slow down the system. And whilst the need for regular revaluations is a positive, it's also a disadvantage in the fact that it costs money, but a regular revaluation keeps the whole system fair and equitable and up to date. Can I have the next slide, please? So everything we do in terms of Northern Ireland is based in legislation. So our primary legislation is the Rates Order 1977, and we look for a technical term, which is a hereditament. And a hereditament is just really a unit of occupation. So you could have a multi-storey office block, and each floor in that office block might be separately occupied by different ratepayers, and they would all be theoretically separate hereditaments or separate entries in the valuation list. In order for us to get a valuation list entry or hereditament, there needs to be four ingredients met. So we look for actual, exclusive and beneficial occupation. And we also look for a thing called transience. So transience is best explained if a circus tent moves into town for 2 or 3 weeks. It's too short a time frame, so it's too transient. So therefore, it doesn't satisfy the criteria. It doesn't go into the valuation list. From a Northern Ireland perspective, there's a few things that are not to be treated as hereditaments under the legislation. And the big thing that we have is agricultural land and buildings, but we also have things like crematoriums, cemeteries, lighthouses, and the public parks. Essentially, nobody has exclusive occupation of a public park, so therefore it's not a hereditament. Can I have the next slide, please? In terms of who does what, so I work for LPS Valuation. We deal with the valuationists, so we create and maintain the valuation lists. Within the Department of Finance, there's also the Rating Policy Division. They're responsible for the policy, the rates relief. They would have been very busy during the whole COVID era, and I think they had at least 50 pieces of legislation that they put through, which essentially allowed LPS to transfer from an organisation that collects money to an organisation that gives money out. There also would normally pass information through to allow the finance minister to set a regional rate. I'm sure you're aware this time around that that's been set by the Secretary of State. And the regional rate poundage for non-domestic properties has been frozen this time by the Secretary of State. The 11 district councils, they set their own district rate. And then we've got our colleagues there in revenue benefits. You collect the money and apply any statutory reliefs. On the right-hand side, that's just a very basic example of how the rates bill is calculated. So it's the rateable value multiplied by a combination of the regional rate plus the district rate. The two of those are added together and multiplied by the rateable value or the NEV to get the rates liability. Can I have the next slide, please? So rating in Northern Ireland is what's termed an ad valorem tax. And basically, that's just a fancy phrase to say that it's based on the value of something. For us, it's based on a rental value at a fixed point in time. And the occupier is liable to the tax. So it's a tax on occupation of a property, essentially. Or if the property is vacant, it reverts back to the person who's entitled to possession of the property. You can see there on the right-hand side what the textbooks have called have suggested that you do a revaluation every 5 years, but nowadays the current modern thinking is that we move to a three-yearly pattern, and the business community themselves have lobbied for this to do more frequent revaluations. This is actually our third revaluation within 8 years, and we are now moving on to the three-yearly revaluation cycle. Okay, the next slide, please. So our task is to revalue just under 75,000 properties. That number fluctuates on a daily basis as new properties or herd elements are entered into the list or are taken out. But it's everything that you can think of, from the normal run-of-the-mill sort of bulks, as we call them, shops, offices, warehouses, to more unique properties like airports, factory, power stations, railways, that sort of thing. But the business rates themselves are very important for the Northern Ireland economy. They generate 675 million per year, and they make a vital contribution to all of the frontline services that the central and local government provide, you know, things like hospitals, schools, emergency services, that sort of thing. Can I have the next slide, please? The key message for any revaluation is it's a revenue neutral exercise, so it's not designed to create more revenue. The best way to try and explain it is that we are looking for a rent at a fixed point in time. So it's only the known factors that could be in the mind of two people agreeing a rent at that fixed point in time could be taken into consideration. So our current valuation list is based on the 1st of April 2018. So if we didn't do a revaluation, what we would essentially be saying is we could, you know, it's frozen in time, the valuation. We can't take account of any changes such as COVID and the impact that that had on rental values after 2018, because they wouldn't have been in the mind of somebody agreeing a rent at that point. So by doing this revaluation, we are moving our valuation date forward to the 1st of October 2021, and that allows us as valuers within London Property Service to essentially take account of any changes that have occurred, either from COVID, or any other economic changes or relative changes. You know, some property, some areas get more desirable or less desirable over time. A revaluation allows us to take all that into account. And by doing that, we redistribute the rates burden by rebalancing business rates on up-to-date rental values. And essentially means that the system stays fair. Can I have the next slide, please? So our key date, statutory valuation, is the 1st of October 2021. What we did at that point in time is we rolled out to 55,000 ratepayers. The reason it's 55,000 and not the full 75,000 that we have in the valuation is because there's 20,000 properties that are never ever let. So we know that we write out that you'll not get rental information. And that's things like schools, hospitals, universities, that sort of thing. So for the 55,000 that we wrote out to, I can tell you we got about 25,000 responses, which is better than what we had last revaluation. So last revaluation, we got 19,000. So it's going the right trajectory. But obviously, we would like to get as much information back as possible. So we spent 3 months then looking at that information, honing in on what was good, what we needed. So sometimes, the information might be a vacant property, so there's no rent there. It might be owner occupied, so there's no rent. So we spent 3 months honing in, and then 10 months essentially coming up with our draft schedule of values. Once we got to that point, I met a lot of the councils and their rate setting finance officers, and we gave them draft schedule of values. In January of this year, we also published our draft schedule of values online to the public. And that we don't have to do that. There's nothing that says in the legislation that we have to do that, but in essence, it allows us to stress test our valuations. And I've spent the last 3 months going around trying to raise the profile of the revaluation and encourage repairs to go online, check the impact of the reval 2023 on their valuations, and contact the LPS if they think that there's something wrong. The early reval outcome, so what we can see for this is the first time that our valuation list has gone down, slightly declined by 10 million. There's a number of 33 primary classes. You can see some of them are up 11% for warehouses, also up 10, shops down 4, hotels down 24. Okay, next slide, please. It fluctuates across the district councils. So you can see there, your district council, for instance, is seeing essentially the biggest decline at 5.2%. So failures in the property services, can't emphasize enough, we follow the market. So it's based on the rental market, rental information we collect through those rental lease questionnaires. In contrast, Causeway Coast and Glens is up 3.2%. The reason they have those differences is all to do with individual makeup of the properties within your district. So that 5% essentially represents around 5 million, but you've got 27%, I think it is, of the properties in your district is retail. The Causeway Coast and Glens have seen an increase because they've got a lot of things like renewables, and they're seeing an increase this time around. So renewables are wind turbines and that sort of stuff. Okay, the next slide, please. Within your district as well, there's just under 7,000 valuation list entries. Not uncommon across all districts. The biggest increase is renewables are up 23%, and the largest decrease is hotels down 24%. But after this revaluation is finished, 64% are going to see no change or decrease in their NAV as a result of this revaluation. The next slide, please. Also within your district, you can see there are things like shops are down 4%, pubs 24%, offices are neutral, and schools are down 18%. The next slide, please. So after we've done everything, 75% of properties in Northern Ireland have a rateable value of 15,000 or less. And what that means is that if they don't qualify for a statutory relief, like exemption from rates, which is 100% relief, industrial extinguishment is 30%. They only have to pay 30% for sport and recreational relief. They pay 20%. They don't qualify for those. Those are application-based reliefs. They'll qualify for small business rates relief. And after we've done the revaluation, there's going to be nearly 30,000 properties will still qualify for that. And that's applied automatically to their bill. The next slide, please. So our next step is we're going to publish the full valuation list. So as the statutory valuation list goes live on the 1st of April. That's a legislative requirement, and everything is set and ready to go. So we're just making sure that we are ready to do that. Can I have the next slide, please? Yeah, our website is up to date. The other thing that I would just say to you is that, you know, if a repair is thinks that there's a problem with their valuation, come the 1st of April, they can still contact Land and Property Services and ask for an application to the district valuer at any time, and there's no cost to do that. The only caveat is that valuation can also go up as well as down, and they put it a challenge. So that's pretty much it. I'm trying to keep it very brief. I'm conscious you have a busy night ahead of you. So thank you very much for listening. I'm happy to take any questions.
Okay, thank you very much for that presentation. Are there any questions coming from members of the committee? Councillor Byrne, Councillor Sharvin. Councillor Byrne, you want to go ahead there? Can't hear you, Pete.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
It was off my head, sorry. Thanks for the presentation, Gary. I have a specific question around one of the relief schemes, the back in business scheme. I've a number of businesses that had applied for it back at the start of February, and then I contacted LPS to get a follow-up on it. Actually, the first application was in on the 6th of February, and speaking to two members of staff, weren't aware of the details of the scheme or had no knowledge of it, and it's still sitting in limbo. And actually, this is one of the businesses got an email back asking them with the application form to apply again to it. Is there an issue with this scheme, the knowledge of it being open? That's a 50% discount where it has been unoccupied for 12 months and starting from April 22. I've signposted a number of businesses to it, but we're getting major problems.
Not that I'm aware of specifically. The only thing I can suggest is that if I send my email through to you, or you
please do
contact me, and you follow up that way, and I'll make sure somebody gets back in touch.
Yeah, because I've the application number, I can follow up with you. If you forward the email to me, that'd be great.
Yeah, no problem at all.
Great, thanks very much. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Similar question to Councillor Byrne there. I was actually contacted by a business today who have a building that's been vacant for some time, but they obviously aren't aware of the process that they need to undertake to declare it as vacant and to get the rates relief. As part of the process of the revalve, obviously, are yous out on site that can easily identify that a building is vacant? Because the onus is very much on the owner rather than LPS to say that it is vacant. And if you don't know, both domestic and domestic properties, you know, you may not know the information or who you contact to get the property declared as vacant or even derelict in some situations. Because I had one with the domestic property where they actually completed the work, but had been vacant for 10 months, and they rang after the work was done and they're told that they couldn't get anything because they had now made it livable and habitable. So I suppose that's the first question. In general, you know, it's a good story for the owners within Uriemore and Down that their rate amount that they'll be paying will reduce mostly across the board. Obviously, there will be some that will see an increase, but generally across the board, most of that will be. But as we all know through the rates process, the rate support grant certainly has been slashed quite significantly. So we as a council may be worse off given the re-evaluation down the line, given the 5.2% negative in the total amount. So just a couple of questions around the process of derelict vacant. Is it the ownership of that on the property owner, or is LPS involved in any of that at all as well?
Well, my advice to any repair is always to take proactive action and inform LPS once the property goes vacant. So if it is a commercial property and it's been vacant for, basically it doesn't pay any rates for the first 3 months, and then it pays 50% of its liability once it becomes vacant. We are on the ground regularly. We do what's called continuous revision of the valuation list. But, you know, generally speaking, when we're doing that, we are out at the request of a repair. So we do rely very heavily on repairs to get in touch and tell us if, you know, if something has changed. And we will take action where necessary. In terms of the domestic stuff, domestics can be slightly different. So if it's a new domestic property, what would normally happen is they would serve completion notice once it gets to the stage where, you know, it looks like it could be completed within 3 months. And from there, then it goes into the valuation list. But again, you know, I always say people take proactive action and get LPS informed at the first stage, so as to avoid, you know, things like backdated rates liability building up on them.
Okay, yeah, that's perfect. Thanks, Gary. Councillor Brennan?
Thank you, Chair. It's more of a comment. I'd like to thank Gary. As a small business owner, unfortunately I'm in Lisbon and Castlereagh, the rates can sometimes be a bit of a minefield when you're doing it yourself and you don't have experts on board to do. So it's really just a reflection of thanks towards Gary, because you've clarified a lot for me as a small business owner, and I appreciate your input. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Jim. I don't see any other questions or comments coming through. So, Gary, thanks again for that comprehensive report. And I'm sure if anybody thinks of anything, you know, after the meeting, or, you know, they want to bring any questions, that we're able to contact you. Is that correct? Yeah.
Yeah, that's sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Linda has my email address.
Okay, perfect. Well, listen, thanks for your time tonight. We really appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you. Okay, so we'll move on to item 5 on the agenda, which is the notice of motion from Councillor Stokes, Uriemore and Down District Council, appropriately marking the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. Is Cancer Strokes online? Okay, Councillor Stoke could make it this evening, but we just need a proposer and seconder then, do we? Colin, do you want to come in and speak to the motion or add any comments?
All I've got to say is this was referred to the Equality and Good Relations Reference Group, discussed there. Policies 1.1 does say it's rebellion to anniversaries, but that's for another notice of motion. What we actually outlined at the meeting were the things already happening in the museum, and it was really to note the things that the council's already running. So it was, the notice of motion was compatible with the types of things council was proposing to undertake.
Okay, Councillor Taylor, you have a comment?
Yeah, I have, Chair. Thanks. Chair, I'm a bit concerned that there's a lack of any unionist representation in what's been planned so far. I'm conscious that, you know, obviously my party played a very important part of negotiations involved in the Belfast Agreement. And, you know, and I'll just use this as an example. For instance, the event taking place in Down County Museum, where it's reflecting on the 25 years from the signing of the agreement. Like, one person that comes to mind is Dermot Nesbitt, who was a key part of the Ulster Unionist negotiating team at that time and is obviously a resident of the district. And I don't know whether Dermot was maybe approached about it. If he was, that's fair enough. But I think to give some diversity and some, you know, wider range of reflection on what happened and what's led, you know, over the last 25 years, I think it's important that you have that balance. Or even another example could be Lady Daphne Trimble, who obviously, you know, is the wife of the late David Trimble, and again is originally from this district. So I'm just a bit concerned that at this stage that it's not balanced in the way I would feel it should be, and maybe some more work could go into, you know, particularly the event maybe at Down County Museum, where they could maybe have a wider panel on reflecting what happened from the time of the Belfast Agreement. So it's a comment and a suggestion possibly, if that could be looked at.
I do believe, are you set on good relations, Councillor Taylor?
Yes, but
I did
wasn't,
you bring that up when it was...
Sorry, Chair, just before you make, I wasn't at that meeting, Chair, so...
did you miss it, did you?
Yes, right, I did, okay. So before...
Okay, well, what I'll do, yeah. I'll let the other councillors come in and then we'll refer back to Colin then, okay? So Councillor Gallagher's proposing and Councillor McMurray was going to second, and Councillor Sharvin has comment.
Yeah, Chair, I do sit on the Equality and Good Relations, and I was definitely there. So it was actually raised what Councillor Taylor had mentioned. I actually had raised it myself, following some comments from another councillor. I don't know if he's here or not, but and I did stipulate that, you know, it may be good to have difference of opinions. You know, Councillor McKee even stated within Equality and Good Relations how he voted, and I'll not publicly state how he did. You know, so there is maybe an opportunity to expand the panel, to have a broader view of the good and the bad of the Friday Agreement in anyone's personal opinion. So I do agree with Councillor Taylor.
Yeah, and the clues and the title that it was a good agreement. So absolutely take on board everybody's views with it. We'll refer back to Colin then to see what we could do with Councillor Taylor's addition to the motion tonight or suggestions.
Well, what we can do is we can refer this all back to the actual museum, to Noreen Cunningham, for the creator, assistant creator, to look at it. Just to maybe say as well, these matters, yes, they were discussed at the reference group, and we did pass on some of those comments after meeting to the museum through Noreen over to Declan Carroll and Payne Abraham. And as well, I know Councillor McMurray did send on details about politics and action, which is because some of the matters that were raised at the meeting referred to, you know, how to engage young people. At the end of the day, this is 25 years ago. A lot of the young people nowadays, I've often seen this when we're doing training for seasonal recruits, and you're often talking about legislation, and they weren't even born at the time of the Good Friday Belfast Agreement. So it is we've passed that on already to the museum to see if they can incorporate ours, or anything they could do as well.
Okay, no problem. Are you content with that, Councillor Taylor?
Well, Chair, I've made a suggestion, and I would like an approach to be made to maybe one of the individuals that I mentioned there, given their important role at the time of the signing of the agreement. So if they can't do it, that's fair enough, but I think just it would be important to have that wider range of view for balance and for even for a historical context. It's important when it's obviously been a very important part of our politics and the development of our politics over the last 25 years. And I think, you know, given that that is the case, it's important that we have as balanced and as wide a range of view about particularly what happened at that time and what's led on from there. And people can give their own opinions, obviously, you know, from what, like somebody, for instance, like Dermot Nesbitt, who was involved in the negotiations, and he could reflect on where he thought maybe Northern Ireland could be now or where it should be, and you know, and even critique parts of it as well. So I think it's more about balance and obviously, you know, wider range of views about where we are and what's passed in the last 25 years. I think it's important for even the people that are there. It adds to their, you know, evening if they're or their day if they're listening to as wide a range of views as possible. So I would like an approach to be made that at least one or of the individuals that I mentioned there.
Well, as somebody who lives through it and find it very, very significant, you know, I wouldn't disagree with any of your comments. So is your proposal that we write to Mr. Nesbitt and Lord Trimble, is it?
Yeah, if one or the other
I'm happy
willing
to second that then. Yeah, we can do. I'm sure that it wouldn't be an issue.
Yeah. Okay.
Hi, Sir McMurray, you want to make a comment?
Yeah, Chair, no, it was just really the comment in the back of some of the things that were said. Certainly, the idea about engaging young people, that was an idea of Councillor Sharvin's, and I think that was a very notable idea. Again, if it hadn't been seconded, I was quite content to second David Taylor, Councillor Taylor's. I suppose the only thing to finish on would be just to say it's a bit too late in the day to get Tim Wheeler and Bono back together for a concert session maybe, but maybe that might be a bit beyond the pale. So anyway, thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Sure, I'm not happy to accept that amendment to me.
Well, I can lend you a few rock stars if you're stuck. Okay. Councillor Clark?
Just briefly, Chair, just in regards to, you know, people who have an influence in the Good Friday Belfast Agreement. Anne Carr was a local councillor in Down Council, and she's a member of the Women's Coalition and campaigned very heavily, you know, for a yes vote. So, I'm not sure if Anne's involved in it, but I'm sure if she was written to, she would take up the offer.
Okay. So we have a proposal from Councillor Gallagher and seconded by Councillor McMurray with a slight amendment or addition to the motion from Councillor Taylor to write to Lady Trimble, Mr. Nesbitt, and from Councillor Clark to write to Ms. Carr. So are we all content with that action then? Yeah, we're all in agreement. That's great. Okay, no problem. So we'll move on then to item 6 on my agenda. I think it might be slightly different, published, but I have the Memorial Garden to acknowledge the 180th anniversary of Newcastle fishing disaster and all those who have lost their lives through fishing. And this notice of motion is taken by Councillor Clark. You want to go ahead, Willie?
Thanks. That's brilliant. Thanks very much, Chair. We had a good discussion at the Equality and Good Relations Committee. And there were some issues brought up about, you know, the loss of life to fishing throughout the county around coast. And my motion does incorporate that. You know, it's the loss of life of fishing in the region. Chair, the motion is to rectify, in my opinion, is an injustice to the memory of the 73 local people who lost their lives in the Newcastle fishing disaster. It was a loss of 73 fishermen in 1843. And as you can imagine, it was a devastating tragedy that fell upon the fishing community. In regards to what the council, I'm looking at the council to do is in regards to most of the land that would be, you know, appropriate for the site of a memorial garden would be in council ownership. It would be South Promenade. Or the Bogie Hill, in my opinion, would be the two locations. The Bogie Hill is the start of the Granite Trail, if people aren't aware where it is. It overlooks the harbour. So, in my opinion, that would be the best place. But it's also to look at, you know, obviously funding for council to assist, you know, in funding how we develop the garden. The Harbour Regeneration Association is doing sterling work, has been commemorating the disaster now since its formation. A number of years ago, about 10 years ago, I took a notice of motion to Down Council, and we had an interpretive panel. We had a weekend of events in regards to it, which was a major success. And just to sort of lay out the context, if you can imagine, even now, there were 73 people who lost their lives. And it wasn't just our community, you know, in England, I think there was about 100 people lost their lives in England, in Scotland as well, and the rest of the island of Ireland, a number of people lost their lives as well. So it was a major disaster for the fishing community in general. Just to say a bit of context, and, you know, in regards to the disaster itself, you know, the harbour community was Newcastle at that stage. And if you can imagine, you know, they lost two-thirds of their menfolk during the disaster. There was over 100 children left fatherless. It took 7 years to build the row of cottages where I was born and reared in the Willis Row. And then if the fishing disaster wasn't bad enough, they lost, you know, they lost their menfolk, but they also lost their means to earn a living. They lost their boats. And the suffering must have been enormous. And particularly for the women who had to rear the children on their own. And we think 1843, the famine was fast approaching. So that was a greater disaster that was to befell the people in that area as well. As I say, 73 men lost their lives. The disaster left 27 widows. As I say, about 118 children were left fatherless. The watch house was used as a temporary morgue, and that's in the middle of the harbour. It's a scheduled monument. And it still has a great attachment to the harbour community, that particular building. And that sort of takes us on the regeneration of Newcastle Harbour as well. And hopefully we're making good progress in that as well. That's basically the context, Chair. And I hope the members support the motion.
Thanks, Councillor Clark. Could you have a seconder for your motion? Oh, you've put yourself on mute there, Willie. Right, okay.
Jim Brennan. Chair.
Oh, there, he's not a member.
Oh, right.
Councillor Hyle is going to propose the motion as a member of the committee. And if we could have a seconder for the motion, Councillor McMurray. Okay. Does anybody want to come in with any questions, or is everybody content with the motion? Councillor Gallagher.
Thanks, Chair. No, I think it's very emotive, Councillor Clark, and acknowledge, you know, that the history's gone by. So I point in the sense of, you know, that there's a lot of folks who have lost their lives even over the past 30 years within Newcastle and the fishing industry as such as well in that area. So look, I'm 100% behind, and I think it would be a nice place for remembrance as such as well. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you. I don't see any other questions coming through on that, so motion is passed then.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Okay, so we'll move on to item 7, Notice of Motion on Rebellion Anniversaries. And this notice of motion was taken to Council by Councillor Brennan. Councillor Brennan, do you want to come in and speak to the motion?
Yes, thank you, Chair. First of all, my motion will be seconded by Councillor McMurray. I was really glad to see equality and good relations. This was virtually agreed on unanimously. At the end of the day, no matter how you look at the history of this place, it is a shared history.
is a shared history. Maybe good, maybe bad, but at the end of the day, it's a shared history. The battles of Ballinahinch and Saintfield seen over 700 people dying for different causes. It's interesting to know that the yeomanry who were fighting on behalf of the Crown, a lot of them were Roman Catholics at the time, and the United Irishmen were made up mostly of Presbyterians, a lot of them from the north of this county. So I look to see further down in the motion that we're looking at a 12-week consultation period. That would be fine, because that would take us through to roughly the 17th of May, and the anniversaries of both battles are the 9th of June for Saintfield and the 12th of June for Ballinahinch. And of course, Thomas Russell's anniversary falls on the 21st of October. We have mentioned earlier on the youth in the county, getting them to know the history. And for me, this is an ideal opportunity for everyone to look into and embrace our shared history rather than looking at some of the dark times of the past. And really, that's it. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Brennan. And it is proposed by Councillor Hyle as a committee member and seconded by Councillor McMurray. You wanted to make a comment, Andy?
Yeah, no, just that I was happy to second this at the full council and second it here. Just that 1798, you know, really is a significant time in our history and such a significant role that was played in this area. And again, just it's a period of Irish history that I still find incredibly interesting. And I'm not just the only person. I mean, you only have to look at the event happening tomorrow night and the following night, I think, which is sold out in Downpatrick. So, I mean, this really is such an important thing. In Belfast, you know, there are successful tours. In Antrim, there are successful tours. If something can be built on this, be it interactive tours or, you know, standalone tours, it'll be certainly, something to be welcomed. And what was I also going to say? Again, I think as well, there's something that we should do as a council, I think, more, is that, you know, don't go too much into it. We were at an event or a seminar from the council which was making play on sort of fictional historical events, if that makes sense, and yet here we have what true real history that is so significant to our country that I think as a council we should really be trying to get behind here. So thank you very much.
Yeah, I very much concur as somebody who studied this at A-level history just a few years ago. But, you know, we were taken on tours of Saintfield, believe it or not. So I think it's really, really important that the next generation and even people who are interested to learn about it know that it's right on our doorstep. It's such a pivotal time in history. Councillor Sharvin?
Yeah, turn. Luckily, from your A-levels, the history hasn't changed, so it doesn't matter how long ago it was. But, Chair, I suppose the question to Colm Moffat, it details in the report there is no budget assigned to do any of this and that we're planning to go to potentially good relations in the museum programme. Will the report then come back confirming that this has been included and there is a budget set aside? Because, as I said, quality and good relations, I think this is a very good and it'd be a brilliant display of our history and celebrating the significance of the anniversaries, but it's just trying to understand the process of what happens after agreeing this tonight.
Yes, Colin.
Yeah, ultimately, obviously we can't do anything until the notice of motion has been agreed, we can then liaise with both the Martina Flynn, who looks after the Good Relations Programme and the Good Relations Budget, and also the museum, to actually look at where they can incorporate that into their programme activity. We can come back then to the committee with what they may have agreed. So if that satisfies the committee.
Okay, that's brilliant. So we have agreement in the chamber to pass the committee then, and it was proposed by Councillor Hall and seconded by Councillor McMurray. That's great. Thanks, Colin, for your time this evening. If we move on to item 8 on the agenda, governance arrangements. Andrew's going to take up.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Purpose of this report is obviously following the local government elections in May 23, a number of governance arrangements need to be formalised to allow the council to prepare for the interim period between the election and the AGM and the annual meeting itself. So it's the issue of three issues here. One of delegated authority, that during the period from the last council meeting, which will be on the 3rd of April, to the first full council meeting after the annual meeting on the 6th of June, in the absence of a fully functioning council decision-making structures, critical issues may arise where delaying a decision may not be a prudent approach. The ask here is for the council to give delegate authority to Marie Ward, the chief executive, to make these decisions in the absence of the formal mechanism. And such decisions have to be made. The council will be informed retrospectively at the AGM or a subsequent relevant committee. The annual meeting itself, due to the sort of rescheduling of the local government elections, recommendations to hold a mock annual meeting on Thursday, the 1st of June at 2 o'clock, with the actual annual meeting being held on Monday, the 5th of June at 6 p.m. And members will appreciate that annual meetings have to be held within 21 days of any election. And the third item there is in relation to standing orders, where standing order 21.343 reads, Neighbourhood Services Committee, as a result of the organisational restructure carried out during 2022, is recommended that name is changed to Sustainability and Environment Committee. So, Chair, the three, in relation to those three, the recommendations are in front of you. The delegation of the authority, the date of the annual meeting, and the change to standing orders. Thank you, Chair.
Okay,
Councillor McMurray. And I don't want to conflate two issues, but I was under the impression that I thought the minutes on the Mourne Gateway project would be here tonight. And I suppose really what I'm just concerned is that the delegative authority,
is that in relation to this item, Councillor McMurray?
Yes, it is, because I don't want that something like that would then be under delegated authority be passed, by which then there's some sort of presumed consensus amongst political parties when there isn't at that stage. So just to confirm that isn't the case, Chair.
Chair, in general terms, the limit of the delegated authority would extend to issues that arise during the period after the last council meeting and the first council meeting of the new council, not to issues that are ongoing.
You content with that? I would have thought it was for ART. I think we discussed this before the meeting as well. Yeah. But just to clarify for the minute, it's only matters that arise. Isn't that right, Chair?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Okay, so do we have a proposer and seconder for item 8? Proposed by Councillor Gallagher and seconded by Councillor Sharvin. Okay. Thank you. And item 9 is the Draft Performance Improvement Objective 2023-24. And George's going to take that out.
Thank you, Chair. So, members, in front of you is the Draft Performance Improvement Objectives for 2023-24. And this is really a legislative requirement which all councils have to adhere to under Part 12 of the Local Government Act 2014. Our performance improvement objectives then form part of the performance audit and assessment, which is carried out annually by the Northern Ireland Audit Office. So Section 2.1 of the report then highlights what our objectives are for this year. So it's proposed that Council carries forward three of the five performance improvement objectives from 2022-23. So the objectives are highlighted in Appendix 1 in full, and the supporting actions, measures of success and targets have been developed and updated where appropriate and relevant. So the first objective is we will support the health and well-being of local people by improving our leisure facilities and services. So this is one of the objectives which was amended. Previously it was in relation to parks and open spaces, so it was felt that there was greater measurable targets in really leisure facilities and services. Then the next objective is we will grow the economy by supporting local businesses and creating new jobs. We will improve the cleanliness of our district by addressing littering, fly tipping and dog fouling incidents. So these two are carried forward. Then number 4 is a new objective. We will improve our sustainability and reduce our impacts in relation to climate change And then number five is carried forward again, is we'll improve the processing times of planning applications and enforcement cases by implementing the Planning Service Improvement Programme. So the one objective which is dropped off is the capacity of the local community, building capacity through the local community through the financial assistance scheme. So over 8 million has been issued through financial assistance 2015 and targets have been achieved. So that is why that objective has been replaced. But just moving to 2.4 in the report, councils are required to consult and engage a range of stakeholders, including citizens, businesses and partner organisations on performance improvement objectives. The proposed 8-week consultation programme will run from the 20th of March to the 15th of May 2023 and will consist of Speak NMD, public advertisements in newspapers and engagements with BEA forums and Section 75 groups. But just moving now to the recommendation, members are asked to consider and agree the 5 draft performance improvement objectives for 2023-24 as outlined in Appendix 1, and also to consider and agree the proposed approach and timetable for publishing the Performance Improvement Plan 23-24 as outlined in Appendix 2, including approval to commence consultation and engagement process on the 20th of March 2023. So happy to take any questions, Chair.
Proposal from Councillor Murray. I had a question. I was reading through this last night and probably more in relation to on the back of another meeting I had a couple of weeks ago. Do the council, and forgive me if it's in here because it's quite a hefty document, do we measure the outputs of for businesses and into the local economy in terms of, you know, how much of it goes back into the economy, like what percentage of the pound goes back in based on the support the council's given, if that makes sense?
Yeah, that would be objective number 2. So if you go to the measures of success within Appendix 1,
okay.
So basically every quarter, directors have the feedback to the performance manager, really their targets, and then this is reported mid-year and then the final year assessment. So this year's just come to an end, and then the audit office actually carry a review of our assessment to ensure everything is above board. Yeah, so we would be reporting on that twice yearly.
Okay, and do we have a target for that then?
Yes, the target will be in. Let me see. So there's a number of measures of success. There's 6 different ones. So it's number of social enterprise startups, number of social enterprise jobs created, number of business plans created, number of jobs promoted, number of new businesses and employer enterprises supported to start up, a number of existing businesses supported to progress growth. So every one of them has a target, and then we have to report twice or biannually, basically.
But we don't look specifically at the percentage of the pound going back into the local economy. So say, for example, it's sitting at 40p now, would we have a target to bring it up to, say, 85p to make sure that the money that the council's spending and supporting these businesses is actually going back into the local economy again?
It's not a current measure of success, but it is something we could go back and see if it's possible.
Okay.
That EORT can monitor that. So okay. I'll go back to Amanda Smith and Jonathan McGilley and see if that's something we
and
can.
And that's not a target. I'm just making the point that
yes,
it's a good measure of success for the council.
No, not a current one, but I'll go back to the team and
okay.
Go back
Thank
to
you
then. Sure.
Any other questions? Okay, we have a proposal from Councillor Moore and seconded by Councillor Byrne then. Okay, that's great. Items 10 to 15 are deemed to be exempt under paragraph 3 of part 1 of Schedule 6 of the Local Government Act 2014. Information relating to the financial or business affairs of any particular person, including the council holding that information and the public, may be by resolution be excluded during this item of business. So if we could have a proposer and seconder to go into closed session, please. What did I say? Sorry. We'll go to 10 to 25. So if we could have a proposer and seconder. Moved by Councillor Harrell and seconded by Councillor Gallagher. Whilst in committee, the following items were agreed for decision. Item 10, the lease of lands at Station Road, Castlewellan, under Council Support and Community Leasing Policy. On the proposal of Councillor Gallagher, seconded by Councillor McMurray, it was agreed that elected members approved to enter into a lease with a group noted in the report in respect of lands at Station Road, Castlewellan, as outlined in red on the map attached hereto, for a term of 25 years at a peppercorn rent subject to departmental consent. Item 11, the lease of lands at Listrum Gullion, Armagh Road, Newry, under the Council Sports and Community Leasing Policy. On the proposal of Councillor Byrne, seconded by Councillor McGuinness, it was agreed that elected members approved to enter into a lease with the group noted in this report in respect of that portion of the lands known as Listrum Gullion Open Space Armagh Road, Newry, as outlined in blue on the map, for a term of 25 years at a peppercorn rent, subject to departmental approval. Item 12, lease of lands at Answer Castlewellan under the Council Sport and Community Leasing Policy. On the proposal of Councillor Howell, seconded by Councillor McMurray, it was agreed that elected members approved to enter into a lease with the club noted in the report in respect of the lands known as Answer Playing Fields, Answer Castlewellan, as outlined in orange on the map, for a term of 25 years at a peppercorn rent subject to departmental consent. Item 13, the proposed licence of fishing rights at Donaghy Lake, Warren Point. On the proposal of Councillor Sharvin, seconded by Councillor Howell, it was agreed elected members approved to grant the licence to Warren Point, Restrever and District Angling Club for the fishing rights for Donaghy Lake, Warren Point, for a period of up to 3 years at a peppercorn licence fee, subject to departmental consent. Item 14, proposed lease of lands at Dundrum to NI Water for new wastewater pumping station. On the proposal of Councillor McMurray, seconded by Councillor Howell, it was agreed elected members approved the following to facilitate the installation and maintenance of the new wastewater pumping station. Number one, that elected members agree to the granting of the lease with easement to NI Water Limited for a term of 99 years, subject to a one-off premium of £1,500 and nominal rent. Two, that elected members agree to the granting of a licence agreement for works to NI Water Limited. And three, subject to completion of legal formalities and NI Water Limited being responsible for Council's legal and valuation costs. Item 15, amendment to easement at Glen Hill, Watson's Road, Newry. On the proposal of Councillor Murphy and seconded by Councillor McGuinness, it was agreed that elected members approved to amend the easement in favour of the company noted in the report to include a right to lay a surface water pipe along the route marked by a blue dashed line in addition to a foul sewer, and that the position of the foul sewer is changed from the area shown by a green line to the blue hatched line on the attached map, subject to the company paying the additional market value fee, if any. Item 16, lands at Charlotte Street, Warren Point. On the proposal of Councillor Byrne, seconded by Councillor Howell, it was agreed that the elected members approved to enter into a deed of rectification in respect of lands at 42 Charlotte Street, Warren Point, subject to agreement of terms and subject also to departmental consent. Item 17, lands at Lat Villa, Mulloglass, Newry. On the proposal of Councillor Taylor and seconded by Councillor Murphy, it was agreed elected members approved the following recommendations. The purchase of the freehold of the lands at Lat Villas is outlined in red on the map from the freeholder noted in the report for the sum noted in the report. The sale of the lands at Lat Villas is outlined in red on the map to the two neighbouring landowners for the sum noted in the report. Item 18, request to release a strip of land over which the Council holds a charge at Thomas Davis Newry GAC. On the proposal of Councillor Murphy, seconded by Councillor McGuinness, it was agreed elected members approved to release the charge over the portion of the lands outlined in red on map 1 and 2 as per the officer's report. Item 19, Newry Leisure Centre Swimming Pool. On the proposal of Councillor Gallagher, seconded by Councillor Byrne, it was agreed elected members approved the following recommendations. Number 1, to order pool tiles for Newry Leisure Centre as per section 2.1.5 of the report. And a future report will be tabled at SPNR committee in June 2023, outlining a programme of work and timescales for the pool tile repairs. Item 20, lease of Monaghan Row from Southern Health and Social Care Trust. On the proposal of Councillor Murphy, seconded by Councillor Byrne, it was agreed elected members approved Council entering a lease with Southern Health and Social Care Trust for a term of 2 years, with an option to extend for a further 6 months if required, subject to the rent noted in the report, which has been determined by LPS, and subject to also the payment of service charges. Item 21, the renewal of Advertising Solutions Framework Contract Agreement. On the proposal of Councillor Murphy, seconded by Councillor McGuinness, it was agreed elected members approved to grant approval at paragraphs 2.2 and 2.3 of the officer's report. Item 22, business case for the provision media monitoring services for council requirement. On the proposal of Councillor Howell, seconded by Councillor Sharvin, it was agreed elected members approve the business case at Appendix 1 and give approval as at paragraph 1.6 of the officer's report. The items 23 and 24 and 25 are for noting, all proposed by Councillor Howell and McGuinness. So item 3 was management accounts 2022-23 quarter 3. Item 24 was the update in local government pay 2023, and item 25 was chief executive appraisal. And then item 26 is for noting, and it's the update on the COVID inquiry. So that will complete our proposer and seconder for item 26. Yeah, if we could have a proposer and seconder for item 26. Proposed by Councillor Sharvin and seconded by Councillor McMurray. Anyone to make a comment, Councillor McMurray?
And more chair, just to say thank you for the year of chairing. You know, it's a difficult gig. You've always been very fair and strict with us, which has kept some good order. So, and good humour too. So, you know, but the genuine is there, and it's not an easy gig.
Thank you.
And I appreciate that, Chair.
Okay. Good luck to everybody, and safe home. Thank you.
Thanks,
Chair.
Thanks, Chair.